When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mitchell gets back to make the tackle. Wales still in possession. Created by Shane Williams in midfield. Must be Lee Byrne. Williams. Shane Williams started it and finishes it.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. I've got a real treat for you this evening. Making... His second appearance in 6 months, the man who is very quickly becoming the Sam Warburton of the Attacking Scrum podcast, the man who we hold back for the big games, we look after his fitness, we don't want to overwork him because he's too busy training too damn hard. It's Dan Killick. How are you, Dan?
Very good, Jed. Yes, the benefits of being on a central contract with the Attacking Scrum, being very, very well looked after.
I'm just trying to think of what you do share in common with Sam Warburton.
Oh, hell of a lot, I think. Yeah.
Do you think?
No.
I'm not sure, mate. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think you're much more of a Gavin Henson. You've been sidelined because of disciplinary issues. But you're just too good a natural talent. We just have to keep coming back to you.
That sounds about right, doesn't it? A few misdemeanors. bit of talent.
That's it. I feel like maybe you're Henson towards the end of his career now. And you've grown up a bit, but every now and again, you just see one of those little magical glimpses. So hopefully we'll get a few of those on the pod this evening. And we've got plenty to talk about, Dan, of course. We've had more Pro 14 action this weekend with all four regions in action. And we'll be looking closely at those in the first half. And in the second half of the show, we're going to switch attention to look at Wales. Wayne Pivac announcing a very interesting squad, and we'll be getting to grips with that. Plus, we've got some listeners' questions towards the end of the show as well. Where do you want to begin, Dan? You choose. You're the guest. Let's hear it. Where do you want to start with regards to the Pro 14? Which region?
Should we start with the Cardiff Blues game?
Sure. For a man who doesn't support Cardiff, Dan, it's funny how when you're pushed for time, the only game you'll have seen in a weekend will be Cardiff Blues. Why is that?
Alphabetical. Cardiff Blues first, yeah, and we'll move on to the other regions. There might be a fair few questions coming in for you on the other ones, I think.
Well, no worries. Let's start with you then. I thought that was a pretty good win, and I thought that could have been a banana skin. As I said last week, I thought Connacht had been playing pretty well. It looked a little dicey at certain points for Cardiff Blues, but in the end, pretty strong all-round performance.
Yeah, it was a good win, wasn't it? 29-7, built on a massively strongly defensive performance, wasn't it? Really, really aggressive from Cardiff Blues. We haven't seen this side of Cardiff Blues before, have we? You know, I sat back watching it, was thinking this is different. They were really, really up for it to a man in defence, weren't they? There was still a number of errors, you know. It was quite error-strewn, wasn't it, throughout the game? And I thought that Cardiff played sort of all right rugby at times, but the defence was outstanding. It wasn't a brilliant game, but a fantastic scoreline, really.
Yeah, it was. I think, to be fair to Cardiff as well, you know, we all know what they're capable of in terms of running with ball in hand. And I suppose the tendency has been for me anyway, at times to think perhaps they're flat track bullies and they're okay if they're, you know, it's a fast open game and they're able to play the way they want to play. But I think it's pretty encouraging the fact that they were able in both these games, they've been able to pull something out of the bag, which perhaps is not the prettiest, but they've been able to do some of the grunt work and get over the line and pick up points. Two from two. That's, you know, Melville will undoubtedly be pleased with that.
Oh, he will be, yeah. He'll be delighted with it, won't he? And yeah, that's a tough they're tough games, aren't they, against Connacht? As you alluded to, they've been playing well, aren't they? A difficult side to break down. They always bring good level of physicality, don't they? And they can shift the ball about as well. So Cardiff Blues stuck on them. And I thought in the first 20, they needed to look after the ball a fair bit more. So they'd do something nice. But then there was sort of very soft turnovers taking place in the first 20, which was frustrating. But they tightened that up a little bit. But yeah, it was all about the defensive performance, wasn't it? And you know, Pack had a big game, didn't they? Front row held out fairly well. Dylan Lewis was all over the park. I thought he had a fantastic game with the loose, but he usually does, doesn't he? And he did pretty well in the up front as well in the scrum. So yeah, good win for the Blues and some big performances from a number of the players. I thought Jim Botham had a cracker.
The more I watch him, the more impressed I get with him, actually. He's got everything. I like how strong he is over the ball. Love his ball carrying, great athletic player. He seems to be cementing that place as his own. It's something of a new look back row for Cardiff, but you start to look at it on paper and think, two players you can't leave out, Shane Lewis-Hughes and Jim Botham. They're both in very, very good form and they're both massive talents.
They are huge talents, the pair of them, yeah. And, Shane Lewis-Hughes, it's been well documented, isn't it, that he hits hard and carries very, very well. But Botham is, he's not far behind, is he? I watched him quite closely during this game and it doesn't look like there's a huge amount of him, but he hits very hard. He hits hard, knocks him back. You know, tries to get a few hold ups as well. He's a nuisance, good link man as well. So I think Cardiff Blues would be delighted with the balance in the back row, because that was something that I say a lot of Cardiff Blues fans were probably quite concerned about, especially with Ellis Jenkins being out as well. But it couldn't be going better, could it, at the moment?
The bigger concern for me, because you know, as much as Ellis Jenkins is a wonderful player, and as you know, I'm a massive, massive fan of his. They have got some wonderful options in the back row, particularly when it comes to, I guess, what you call fetchers. My biggest concern for them was going to be how they replace the ball carrying of Nick Williams. And that seems to be that between both them and Shane Lewis-Hughes, and to be fair, the tight five themselves, I think they've started to show that they've got some more options in there than perhaps some people would have thought.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that with Ellis Jenkins, obviously not known for being a huge carrier, but it's just this is all round game, isn't it? And the way he can slot in different positions, that he would be he's a big loss, isn't he? Especially with Nick Williams going. But yeah, the second rows have gone very well, haven't they? In these first two games, and I think, how many times have we said it, that Corey Hill makes a big difference to any side he plays in, doesn't he? Just gets them thinking differently. He's a thinking man, second row, isn't he? And you can just see him constantly chirping all the way through the game. And he looks to be integral to them already, which we kind of knew, didn't we? But yeah, he's a great, great player.
I don't want to talk about it, Dan.
Sorry, as
I've said before, it very much feels like watching your girlfriend go back to her ex, and I'm afraid that's just the way I feel about it. But he is, he's a wonderful player, and we've said before that the tight five was an area that they needed to improve upon. And to be honest, as much as I rate Corey and I think he's wonderful, I think what it does show is that, because I really thought that Cardiff needed more niggle in the front five. And on paper, you look at Seb Davis and Corey Hill next to each other and you think, actually, that's a very athletic second row, but perhaps it's lacking in a bit of the out-and-out bastard that I look for in a second row. But I think really, actually, it just goes to show how much of the donkey work Corey Hill does and the positive effect that's having on Seb Davis as well. The two of them look very good together.
Yeah, nice pairing there, isn't it? Seb Davis looks like he's bulked up to me. Looks like he's put a few pounds on, put a bit of timber on. I thought he played well. He had a good game, good solid game. And yeah, the scrum held up fairly well, didn't it? Because they're not the heaviest of second row pairings, and same as the back row then as well. Nick Williams would give a fair bit of grunt, wouldn't he, in terms of weight coming through from eight. So yeah, Cardiff Blues would be delighted with this start.
Bigger tests will await, of course. I, as much as I say it was a potential banana skin at home to Connacht, you know, Zebra away. They're both games that I think Marvel Hill will have been looking at and targeting a win, and fair play to them, they've got that. But yeah, I think some stiffer tests await, particularly when there's going to be a lot of rugby played without your internationals. So the likes of Corey Hill and Dylan Lewis, who you've mentioned there, will be missing. And then, you know, you've got the likes of Carey, who came off the bench as well, who's going to be in the Wales squad too. So we will concentrate more on that Wales squad in the second half of the show. But I know you're on a very tight schedule tonight, Dan, and it's good of you to squeeze us into it. So we're going to move on and talk about the other regions now. Where do you want to head to next?
Let's go to the Dragons. Dragons.
Oof. Right.
Dragon Zebra.
Yeah, not a spectacle, it has to be said. A win, and a bonus point win, to be fair, is definitely what was required on paper. These are the kind of games that we've said on the pod in recent weeks that Dragons have to be winning if they want to put together a good season. And to be fair, they did that. It was not pretty at times. There was There was lots of very, very simple errors, particularly behind the scrum. And I felt like two of the most reliable players that the Dragons have had in the last season or so, Rodri Williams and Sam Davis, had mixed bags of games. There was some good stuff. There was also some very simple errors in there, which you don't expect from those two because they're very experienced. Both players who people had been suggesting should have been in the Wales squad or certainly had a good chance of getting in there. And I didn't think they had their finest games. I mean, Sam Davis missed four off the tee, which is very, very unlike him. And yeah, I felt like Rodri Williams didn't have his finest game either. And I think if those two halfbacks aren't necessarily performing, not to pin all the blame on them, it just has a knock-on effect across the rest of the back line. And so that was a bit difficult. On the plus side, Jamie Roberts was outstanding. And I just think that actually we're going to have to go back to a very simple game plan and get Roberts on the ball and crashing over the gain line, because whenever he did get a half-decent pass towards him, he smashed through defenders, he scored a try and was quite rightly awarded the man of the match. So that is something that I think is very encouraging. The hunger still seems to be there very much amongst him.
How did the forwards fare up?
I think there was a much better balance in the back row, in my opinion. Again, I think I mentioned this on last week's pod, that as much as I'm a big fan of Harry Keddie, I see him as a six or an eight and not a seven. And I know sometimes it doesn't matter what number you wear on your back, but I do think you need a balance in the back row, and particularly the way the laws are interpreted at the breakdown now, I think you can really benefit if you've got a player who's able to steal ball, and Tane Basham is definitely more in that vein than Harry Keddie is. So I much preferred the balance of the back row with how they went. So yeah, Moriarty, Basham and Keddie, I thought they did well. I think Screech and Davis is our best second row pairing. And I thought actually the forwards put in a much better shift than they did against Leinster. But it was more just lots of basic errors. And that was kind of from 1 to 23, really. Lots of players making lots of errors. And it's frustrating. And as you know, I've been really impressed with the work that Dean Ryan's done. And generally, I think the Dragons are moving in the right direction. But it would have been nice to have a bit of a statement win where things started to click, which, you know, I don't think you could call it a statement win, but bonus point win, that's what they needed. And yeah, I think some pretty rigorous training awaits.
Yeah, as you said, it's very difficult, isn't it, to get a great deal going when you're 9 and 10 are slightly off song then. You can't get a huge amount going through or the backs.
Definitely. And I will say that it's it is certainly by no means their fault, but I think it just goes to show how important both of those players are for the Dragons. That, I think they're the first and second names on the team sheet, really. They just need, you know, if Sam Davis gets injured, then I think things will get very, very tricky for the Dragons. And Rodri Williams isn't far behind that. I think some of the other options at nine, I think Baldwin can be quite a good impact player when he comes comes on. But in terms of game management, they're very reliant on Williams and Davis. And if those two make mistakes, which they have tended not to do in the last year, then it does have that knock-on effect for the rest of the side. But bonus point win is a bonus point win. So, yeah, it definitely wasn't pretty, but the result was what was required.
Okay, so we got two bonus points wins then, Cardiff Blues and the Dragons. Let's move on to the Scarlets.
This is nice to hear you hosting, Dan. It's nice to see you driving this. I like it.
It's an automatic at the moment.
Let's move on to the Scarlets. Blimey. A game of two halves, really. They were absolutely atrocious in the first. And it's very, very strange how blunt they look in attack.
This is odd, isn't it?
It is. It's not what we've come to expect from just generally from Scarlets in their existence, and Llanelli before that. You know, it's a part of the world where they pride themselves on playing running rugby, and this is very, very, it's almost like Sam Allardyce rugby that they're playing. It's route one, sending lots of one-up runners. They've got a big pack now, which we've said before is in theory, you know, it's perhaps an area that they haven't had before. And I like Callum Mahoney. I thought he had another good game. He's very, very direct and made some great carries. But I found it very, very strange because they got isolated on occasions. You know, Frank Murphy was, he's not my favourite ref, but he was very quick to penalise at the breakdown. And Scarlets weren't able to cope with that. If they were sending players up, they weren't committing enough men to the rucks. And after four or five phases of having ball in hand, they got picked off and they either coughed the ball up or gave away a penalty. So in the first half, they were very, very poor. They actually played their best rugby, I think, when they went down to 14 men. Sam Losey got sent off and I don't know. I feel like it almost broke the game up a bit. And I get the feeling that those players want to be playing with more of a broken game, you know. Their natural skill sets would lead you to believe that. We know what, you know, Gareth Davis is an arch poacher and Patchell came off the bench. We know that he loves to run and goes through gaps. Steph Evans loves a bit of broken play. It almost just feels like it's very strange when you've got that back line and you're just trying to crash over the game line the whole time.
Yeah, the tactics are quite perplexing, aren't they? I mean, you would have thought that the Scarlets didn't really need to change anything. The pack just being more direct, more powerful, I suppose more efficient. They look like a real handful. They're not going to be bullied by any side, really. They haven't been bullied by any side, this year so far. They didn't really need to change a great deal, did they? Because that sort of they've got a number of enforcers there that would just benefit the way in which we know and like. You know, to Scarlets, really, isn't it? It's really baffling.
It is, and I certainly wouldn't have been looking to change the style of play. You know, the rugby that's in the Scarlets' DNA, I think, is what they should be looking to play, and they looked much more threatening when they were doing that. You know, I think Glasgow didn't really struggle. You know, the Scarlets didn't score a point in the first half. And it kind of showed because it was very, very predictable. And when they did try, you know, a few moves out the back, it was lacking and they were knocking the ball on, coughing up errors. Set piece was very, very poor in the first half. The line out was, Glasgow were very, very happy to kick ball away, challenge at the line out, and 50% of the time they were able to disrupt the ball. So
Do you think it's almost like when Lousy was sent off, the Scarlets went back to playing a game that they actually know and like, and they played better?
Yeah, I don't know whether it was, you know, whether it was an intentional decision or the game plan was to try and keep it tight for the first 50 minutes and then try and open up. But it did feel like once they went down to 14, you know, you're never going to be able to control a game when you've got 14 men and you've got to think a little bit differently. So I don't know whether it was that or it was kind of pre-planned. But there's lots to think about. There's a lot more questions than answers, I would say, at this stage for Glenn Delaney. He certainly wouldn't want to start the season none from two. And, you know, he's got a wonderful squad of players there. We've said before that is the strongest squad amongst the regions. And it's going to be very interesting now because they will be losing their internationals, more internationals than any other region. And they're going to have to find some results. But at the same time, I'm not gonna write him off, because as you and I remember, Dan, when we started doing the podcast, we had a very similar thing with a certain Wayne Pivac in charge of the Scarlets, and they were really, really struggling, and they managed to get, you know, I think they went like the first five games of that season without a win, and then they managed to string a few ugly wins together when the internationals were away, and they went on and won the league that year. So, you know, strange things can happen in this league, and yeah, they're going to have to start playing a lot better. The thing that I do struggle with is why they're just trying to play so direct when they've got players who are capable of a hell of a lot more.
Totally with you. I think the fixes should be quite quick, really. So, hopefully they are. Hopefully they are. You know, I want to see more from the Scarlets, as we all do, and get back to what we know they can do. So, hopefully that comes through sooner rather than later.
What about the Ospreys then? Should we have a look at that? Oh, go on. You were all there, ready to go for it, weren't you?
I was. Yeah, I was in the outside lane then.
I feel like, Dan, at that point, I'm like the second row who stepped in at acting halfback, and you've come back in with a nine on your shirt. You're like, get down there, get out of the way, you fat ass, get your hands off the ball. I'm driving this.
That's it. Yeah, I'll just give your hands a little kick.
Slap on the back, going, if I want you, it's carrying the ball.
Yeah, slap on the backside. Ospreys then.
Oh. Yeah, bad result for them, and not a particularly inspiring performance. I think what's disappointing is that there was so much kind of enthusiasm off the back of the win in Scotland that would have come as a real bit of a blow. I think the general consensus amongst Ospreys fans is that things are on the up, and it is again a new coach, a lot of new players, and it looks like it's going to be a stronger season. And let's be honest, it couldn't have got any worse, or it certainly shouldn't have got any worse than it was last season. But certainly not the result they would have wanted. They didn't look particularly threatening with ball in hand. I thought at times the defence was good, particularly at the start of the second half. There was a bit more intensity. But I suppose the encouraging thing was that they were still in the game, despite not playing particularly well. But Ulster very much the better side, and it will be disappointing for Toby Booth, because it sucked away the momentum that the win on the first day of the season would have given them.
He seemed bitterly disappointed, didn't he, in the press conference afterwards. His whole body language seemed quite dejected. But I actually think that they did, the Ospreys, they weren't that far away, were they, from Ulster? And Ulster are a really decent side, aren't they? So hopefully the Ospreys can still take a fair bit from that.
Yeah, and again, there were some good individual performances. The more I watch of Morgan Morris, the more I like him. I think that's exactly what the Ospreys have been missing, is someone who's a dynamic ball carrier at eight. And again, he's young, so I think he's got a huge amount of potential that is yet to be realised. And generally, I've liked Myler. I didn't think it was necessarily his best game, but they've definitely benefited from having some experience at 10. Rhys Webb didn't have his best game, but again, he did show what a class act he was the week before, which again is encouraging not only for the Ospreys, but also for Wales. The thing that I would be a bit concerned by is if you go back two seasons or three seasons maybe, we said a number of times how reliant the Ospreys were on having Alan Wynne-Jones, Justin Tipperick and Dan Bigger. And I feel like they're kind of in that same mould now. It's going to be what they need to do is to make sure that when they're without Alan Wynne-Jones and Tipperick, they've got players who are able to step in and do the roles that those guys can do. And that would be a little bit of a concern for me, because again, I think we saw some big performances from both those players, but it's a question mark now as to who can step in and do those roles. And I hope they've got the people there to do it.
Yeah, I think with the Ospreys, it could be quite difficult to build consistency this season. I feel like there's going to be some decent wins when everything clicks and the right guys are there, but there'd also be some losses. Quite a few losses in there as well, because they are they are threadbare, aren't they, in areas? And we know they're not the same when a number of the key players aren't involved. And they're also trying out different players, aren't they? Myler, Myler had a decent game, didn't he, the week before? But I doubt you could sort of, you can build the game, fully around him for the whole season. Then I think that there is going to be something more needed, isn't there, than Myler, surely.
My only concern with Myler really is the fact that he's 35 or 36 years old, and I think you're asking a lot of a guy that age to play that much rugby. The real bad news is that Anscombe's going to miss the whole season, because I think the initial theory or the initial way of thinking was that Myler would hold the fort until Anscombe is ready to play again, and that's not going to be this season. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Ruddock et al. Are kind of scouring some leagues around the world looking for another 10 who's available to come and pull on an Ospreys jersey, because I think it is a lot to rely on. A lot is thought about the lad who came off the bench, at Josh Thomas. I know he's held in high regard. I think he's a very bright prospect and someone who they will be looking to at certain points. But again, you're asking a lot to try and throw a youngster in there. And we saw last season when they were trying to rely on Luke Price and Kai Evans at 10 that they just did not have the experience in there. So 10 is going to be an interesting one for them. I wouldn't say I'm overly concerned at Myler, because I think he's going to be exactly the kind of level head that you need to get through these tough periods when the internationals are away. But yeah, in the long run, it's a lot to ask from a 35-year-old to play.
He's just going to need support, isn't he? It can't purely be on him, can it? So yeah, they need somebody coming in quickly. But the young guy, he's, a lot of people are talking about him, aren't they? So quite excited to see more of him, to be honest, even if there isn't another 10 coming on board.
Yeah, it is exciting. And again, I think that is something that the Ospreys are, we've become very, we're very used to it for a number of years, of seeing those exciting youth talent come through and star for the Ospreys. If you think about the number of players they've produced for Wales since they came into existence, it's more prolific than any other side. And it's been good to see some of those talents coming through. I think Kieran Williams is another one who's going to be very, very exciting. He's shown glimpses already, and I know he's a little bit older than I keep remembering, because he's not played that much consistently, but he's starting to really show potential.
Yeah, he's
23, 24? I think he's 23, yeah. So he's a player who's not played a huge amount of Pro 14 rugby at that age, but he's very, very encouraging. Yeah, so young outside half. Then you've got... you've got Harry Morgan at scrum half as well, who's another bright talent. Tian Thomas Wheeler, these kind of players. So I think they're going to get a lot of game time. And, hopefully Keelan Giles will be able to stay fit for an extended period of time as well. It'd be great to see him. But something that I think was a real frustration for the Ospreys, and we'll finish here before we move on to the second half of the show, was that we know they've got talent in the outside backs. And you've got Luke Morgan on one wing and Matt Prothero on the other, and they didn't really see much of the ball at all. And that will definitely be a frustration, because they were both very, very threatening the week before against Edinburgh. So yeah, plenty to work on for the Ospreys. A disappointing result, but again, tough times will await around the corner when they're shorn of a few internationals. But I do think Toby Booth's a good coaching appointment, and I think that they will definitely have a better season.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm just another point on Prothero. I really like the look of him. I think we'll see him in a Welsh shirt not before too long.
I hope so. It pains me watching the Welsh lads pull on England under 20 jerseys. So I hope he's excited about playing for Wales. But that does kind of tee us up quite nicely to talking about the Wayne Pivac selection, because there's plenty of talking points within that. So we're going to do that. But first, we're going to have this very, very quick break.
Music.
let's get on. Right, time now to look ahead to the Wales autumn campaign, which I don't know about you, Dan, but it feels like this is going to run from mid-October through till about June next year.
Forever.
It is, but the first milestone in that mark is that Wayne Pivak named his squad this Tuesday, and you know the Six Nations squad raised a few eyebrows. I think people were perhaps expecting a little bit more of a settled squad this time round, and it has been another squad full of talking points. What did you make of it?
I like the squad, actually. I think he's gone for a form, isn't he? You know, putting in Callum Sheedy, Yoan Lloyd, Johnny Williams. I was delighted. I was hoping that those boys were going to be included. And they are. And listening to you on the pod over the last few weeks, I think you're probably in the same camp as me, aren't you, on this?
Generally speaking, I thought it's a very, very exciting squad.
Oh, generally speaking.
Well, there's a couple. I've not seen enough from Johnny Williams to suggest that he's a form player yet. I think
I love the look of him.
Do you? I'm just not sure yet. I don't know if it's because he's being asked to do a very direct role in the Scarlet side at the moment, which we obviously discussed in the first half. But I don't know I think that selection has been on the fact that Pivak is clearly a big admirer. He tried to get him to come to Scarlets when he was in charge down there, and he rates him very highly. But again,
there's quite a lot going off what he's done previously, isn't there? And I think what he can do in system plays built like in the Welsh setup.
Yeah, and I'll be keen to see more of him. I'm by no means writing him off, but I probably wouldn't necessarily describe it as a form player. I think that one's more on the potential and the fact that he is a player who's got ability at international level, and obviously England were sniffing around him, and he's, you know, in fact he has played albeit an uncapped game for England. So I'm very, very confident that he is going to be of international level, but I think that one's built a bit more on what Wayne Pivak knows about him. The Callum Sheedy one was a no-brainer for me. Had to get him in that squad. It's tough on Jared Evans, it's tough on Sam Davis, but we know what they're capable of. We know that, you know, I think it's more important for Sam Davis to concentrate on playing well for the Dragons, and we know that he is a good kicking 10. You know, there is more to him than that, but and he has got a degree of international experience. He's just got to keep working. Sheedy, I think, has bags and bags of potential. It's about nurturing.
Well, he's the in-form 10, isn't he?
I think he is. Yeah, I think it's hard to deny that.
He's probably number one, isn't he? And in that English Premiership, there's a lot of good 10s. There's a serious amount of talent, isn't there? And he's consistently delivering as well, isn't he? Really. So
yeah, he is.
He had to be in there, but I think it was still. I was delighted when he did get named, because how many times have we had Welsh squads where, you know, it hasn't, you know, the players that are playing so well haven't been picked.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And as we mentioned last week and a few weeks ago, the prospect of letting him slip through and play for either England or Ireland, it would be absolutely unforgivable. You know, we're not talking about a Welsh qualified player here. We're talking about a boy who's Cardiff born and bred. So,
yeah, because he played call. With Johnny Williams, didn't he? In the he's played for England as well, isn't he? In the NCAP, yeah.
He's played under 20s.
Under 20s?
Oh, yeah, no, maybe you're right. Yeah, you might be right there, Dan. I was there actually on the day, and I can't remember now.
But I thought he'd played, but
he was definitely named in that squad. But I can't remember whether he played that day. You might well be right. So, yeah, it's doubly good from that point of view. But I've no doubt that he's good enough to play international rugby. The question I've got for you though is, Jared Evans, I think, has played very well in these first two games for Cardiff Blues. I'm a big fan of his. Another good game yesterday. Perhaps showing a bit more of the kind of, not just the open running rugby that we love to see from him, but also a bit more game management. if Jared Evans was playing behind Bristol's pack, would we all be absolutely purring and saying that the Welsh side has to be built around him, kind of in a way that we're all purring about Sheedy?
Yeah, it's a good, very good question. We quite possibly would be, and that's why we have to put him in the setup, don't we? See how he fares up, and he can't really do any more than he's doing, can he, at the moment? So I just think we need to, moving forward, we now need to give more players an opportunity. Some will deliver and some won't, but there's so much talent out there, isn't there? I just want to see us bring in the guys that are in form a little bit quicker, and not sort of wait, you know, until they're, I suppose wait really until they're slightly off, they're off song. Because when they're in their absolute peak, like, you know, Louis Rees-Sammet, I mean, he should have been capped previously, shouldn't he? And if we don't pick them when they're absolutely on fire, for them, like, it's almost like, what's the point? But I'm going off topic there slightly. Yeah, I think if we put Jared Evans in that Bristol side, I think he'd look very, very good.
Yeah, no, it was just a thought that kind of popped into my head. But
I think what's impressive with Sheedy, isn't it? It's his game management as well. So he's got the offload, he's got the short pop game, you know, range of passing, plays, you know, links the forwards in quite nicely. So when they play off him, off 10, off 9, and, you know, his kicking game's going well as well. So he just had to be given his chance, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely agree. The interesting one for me, and I know we discussed this on last week's pod, was the selection of the third choice 9. Now, I said I'd have been going down that same route of looking at those players in the Premiership, and I'd have had, you know, I think it's fair to assume that Randall doesn't want to play for Wales, and I get that. But Varney, I think, is a different question. Now, I've seen him get called up by Italy now, and I wonder whether we're going to regret that, because this autumn, more than ever, we've got so many bloody fixtures. If you get him in, see what he's capable of, get him capped, Italy can't have him, and it just builds depth. It builds depth. Ideally, he comes back to Wales. Now, he's realistically going to get capped by Italy, and he's lost to us forever, and that is a... That I think is a massive blow, you know. Even if he got on for 10 minutes and was then capped, even if he never played again, at least we're not going to lose him to another country. I know that sounds cruel, but I think you've got to be quite cutthroat about this, and the opportunity to try and bring him back to Wales as well as seeing what he's capable of at an international level and rewarding the form that he's showing in the English Premiership, I think is a bit of a missed opportunity.
Yep, I think Varney's, from what I've seen of him, he certainly looks good enough, doesn't he? And that does seem to be a missed opportunity. I mean, Hardy's got the nod, isn't he? But his time could have been selected maybe later on. I think he's been playing well, but I don't think anybody would have. Would have had complaints over an inclusion of Varney in there, really.
Yeah, what I would say with Kieran Hardy, to be honest, is I think he's an excellent player, and I think he's a really good prospect, actually. And again, big respect to him for going away, playing Championship rugby for a while, getting a bit of experience and recovering his form, coming back to Wales and playing for the Scarlets and earning his call-up. I've got maximum respect for that. To be honest, I probably would have gone 4 scrum halves in the squad. It's a long old autumn, and I would have had Varney in there as well. But it's definitely to take nothing away from Kieran Hardy, because I think he is a really, really talented player. And again, it's something different to the other scrum halves, I think. There is a niggliness to him that I quite like, and... He's a strong lad as well as being a talented ball player. So, yeah, you know, I've certainly got no problem with his inclusion. All I'm suggesting is, from a longer term picture, I think it is a blow to lose Varney to Italy.
Yeah, it's a good point you make about the 4 scrum halves. I would have gone with 4 as well, actually, because this is lengthy, isn't it? And it's not like your nines are out and out nines, aren't they? It's not like you can draft in, you know, let's take Johan Lloyd, for instance. You know, can play outside half or fullback. You know, Patchell can play a number of positions. We've got players that can play
in
different
positions.
We're
not in France. We're not in France where you can have a 10 play at nine. Let's all calm down here.
So I would have taken four, and then that would have got him involved as well, wouldn't it? But there we are. It wasn't to be.
No, it was not. And then the other big talking point for me is I really can't get my head around the Elliott D exclusion. Now, as you know, we've had Elliott on a couple of times, and he's been really good to give up his time, and he's always a really nice guy to deal with. But I'd like to think I can be pretty balanced with this and kind of take away any Dragons allegiance. But I struggle. For me, he's comfortably the second best hooker in Wales. There's no way he's the fourth best. That does not make sense to me.
Yeah, I messaged Elliott after I saw the squad, and you know, I just said to him, for what it's worth, I think it's the wrong call. You know, he's got to feel particularly hard done by with that, hasn't he, Jeff? I mean, he should be there.
Really should be there. I can't fathom is what, you know, I know you might be listening to this thinking, on the one hand, you're talking about picking scrum halves to play 10 minutes just so you don't cap them. But I think with Hooker, he's proven to be of international class. He's never let Wales down. He's done so much time on the bench during that with 16 on his back. Never lets you down. I know he's playing in a Dragons pack that struggled, particularly in Leinster, but I don't think that was his fault. The line-out was horrendous, but as you said before, the line-out is a group thing. It's not just on the hooker. And that's the thing that I find really, really strange, is how he could slide. If he wanted to experiment and go, do you know what, I'm going to take a different hooker, and I want to bring Sam Parry in because he's a massive guy and it gives me another ball-carrying option. Again, I'd have no problem with that, but I would have said that Parry would get the nod over Elias, who I think is a neat and tidy player. Again, I think he can do a job at international level, but I don't think he's anywhere near as good as Elliott D is. And it's a real strange call for me.
Yeah, tough call that. That is a strange one. When I saw that, I did feel particularly hard done by for Elliott D. But yeah, odd.
Anyone else in the squad, before we move on to listeners' questions, Dan, anyone else in the squad that you are particularly excited to see in action?
I'm looking forward to seeing Will Rowlands get some game time. Some game time for Wales. I think the second row partnership is, for me, you know, Alan Wynne-Jones, you know, what we don't need to say anything there, do we? But Alan Wynne-Jones with Corey Hill seemed to be the partnership that really worked, and when we didn't have Corey Hill involved, we weren't quite the same. I think it hasn't quite worked with the other second rows coming in, so really looking forward to seeing Will Rowlands play with Alan Wynne, and also Seb Davis as well. I he's been given another opportunity now, isn't he, in the Welsh squad, and I just really hope he takes it, because he's a massive talent. But it's about, he needs to go up a gear now, doesn't he?
Needs to go up a gear. But I think, again, to go back to your initial point about rewarding form, I think he's played very well in, not just in the last two games, but I think he played very well in the games at the end of last season after lockdown was lifted. So I do think he's knuckling down, and it's clear that Pivak rates his abilities, and he's the kind of player who would fit into that. You know, it fit into that mould of what Wayne Pivak wants from a forward. So I do think that he has now, like you say, got to go up a gear. I imagine he's going to get his opportunities. But yeah, let's stick with the second row, Dan, as we move on to have a look at some of the listeners' questions. And we have got one here from, let's go for this one first, which is from Gareth Davis. In fact, the listeners' questions I'm picking, we've got Gareth Davis and Jonathan Davis, neither of whom are the Welsh internationals. I'd say, just to point that out.
No, I'm pretty sure they are.
But this one is: has Pivak missed an opportunity to gel a future Rugby World Cup squad by including Alan Wynne-Jones over Beard, Owens over D, bigger over Sam Davis, etc.
Okay. So if we can break this down, you're going to have to remind me as we go along, Jed. But
go on.
Let's have a look at... So Alan Wynne-Jones, for me, Alan Wynne-Jones has to be included because we need to find somebody that can play alongside Alan Wynne. And I think second row is one of those positions where you need to have an older head in there to provide like the spine of the pack. You know, we know how, if you look at the sides, a lot of them keep older heads in second rows, don't they? There's a reason for that. You know, look how long O'Connell stayed with Ireland for, and you know, rightly so. He departed when he needed to, but Alan Wynne-Jones was arguably getting better, wasn't he? Doing things that he couldn't necessarily. He's added different skill sets to his game, and I think he has to be there. So no, I definitely have Alan Wynne-Jones there over.
I mean, I can't imagine ever dropping Alan Wynne-Jones. I think he's going to leave on his own terms, and
Take it though, would he? He wouldn't. If you said to him, look, we're gonna leave you out of, you know, we're gonna leave you out of something, I think he'd hang up his boots for Wales then and there. That would be like, if you drop me or ask me to come down, that's it now.
Imagine the headlines if you dropped Alan Wynne-Jones. I just don't think you could ever do it. I kind of see the point about Adam Beard.
But I think Adam Beard has been given he's been given goes, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, he has. And yeah, I think, again, he's not been in the most mind-blowing form. I think he's shown some great glimpses and he's done a really good job for Wales at times, but I don't think he's necessarily in outstanding form. You know, if you were going to include Beard, you'd include him over Ball rather than Alan Wynne-Jones, I think. But again, you're losing another ball carrier there. So I don't think that was ever realistically an option. I don't think that's the end for Beard by any stretch. I just think he's going to, you know, again, this is the time now. Go back, show the Ospreys and everyone watching how much of an impact you can have for them. Fill the boots of Alan Wynne-Jones in terms of the impact that he has at the Ospreys. And that'll get you back in the Wales squad. So I don't think we've seen the end of him, but there's no way that you're ever going to pick Beard over Alan Wynne-Jones.
No, and I really like the second row options we've got now.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'm excited by it.
Will Rowlands, again, I didn't see the Wasps game, but by all accounts had another fantastic shift for them. I think that...
Yeah, a lot of people say now where he went.
It's going to be very interesting. I think he's going to get a lot more game time for Wales this autumn.
Totally agree. What were the other... so it was bigger. So
the other ones, again, I think to be fair to Gareth, his point here is more picking for the longer term rather than picking the names who perhaps won't be there at the next World Cup. The other point was Owens over D, bigger over Sam Davis, etc. I think we've probably kind of covered both of those when we were talking about the squad initially. But yeah, I think the point is more about taking less established
players then and build into the future. Yeah, I think we've got you have to get the mix right, don't you? And I feel with this squad, bar what we've previously discussed or already discussed, I think it's pretty well spot on. There's a nice mix in there. We have picked more uncapped players than we generally tend to see. So you've got to have that mix, otherwise it just won't work, will you? Because we need to get some wins in there as well. So I'm pretty happy with it.
Absolutely. Right, then the last one, Dan. This is a hell of a one to finish on, especially when we've only got a couple of minutes of your time left. Really contentious question, I know, but do we have one or two clubs too many? Having watched another weekend of Pro 14 compared to the Premiership, I'm not convinced that the standard is good enough. I worry that the likes of Nick Tompkins' game will suffer due to the drop. And that one's from Jonathan Davis. How do you pick the bones out of that?
For me, I worry that if we do go down to, you know, if we lose a pro side or we lose two pro sides, then where are the players going to play? Mm. Now, yeah, the quality is nowhere near as good as the Aviva, is it? It's miles off, but we've got a lot of we've got a you know, a lot of the Welsh boys that are playing in the Aviva are, you know, are outstanding. And I just fear for the long-term game in Wales, really, if we go down to, if we went down to two, you know, two sides. I mean, I just, we've got to, for me, we've got to get more players playing, but that's probably the sort of the tier below needs to be completely transformed, doesn't it? For more players to be playing and get them out of track suits. So I particularly don't want to see it, but I think
I don't, and I don't think now's the time for it either. I think now we are at a stage where we could be seeing a complete shake up of the club game, and I think things are going to be very, very different. So, you know,
but this is the time to do it as well, isn't it? We've got, you know, there's things in complete disarray, so we can actually make some, you know, changes all around us, isn't it? So we can make some further big calls. But I on the actual rugby itself, I am looking forward to seeing more of the, you know, more of the, I suppose, younger players, less established players playing for the regions as well. Because this, a lot of the Welsh squad are going to be away now for the foreseeable, aren't they? Forever.
Yeah. No,
and so
exactly,
we're going to see a load more of the younger guys or players that sort of, you know, like your was it Kieran Williams, who's, you know, 23, seeing him play, that's exciting to me.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Just one point to finish on then, which is a big thanks to Surrey Taff, who sent us in a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it is now. I won't read it all out, but it was very, very complimentary. So a big thanks to you for doing that. And if you want to do the same, then we do really appreciate it. And we'll always give you a shout out if you do that. And
I wasn't on last week, see?
You haven't been on for the last 32 weeks, Dan, or very rarely within that time. However, it has been joyous catching up with you. So thanks for joining us, Dan. And thanks as always to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some great quality coffee, including really good instant coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Dan, I've even got some gifts that Scott has sent for you that have been sat at my house since February. That I do hope at some stage we're going to be able to get together and I can hand over. I've drunk the coffee, but I have got a hat and a mug for you.
Oh, fantastic. I was keen to actually come down to see you this weekend, as you know, but a few things got in the way. So maybe next weekend if I get selected.
Well, that's it. Yeah, you just have to keep putting these performances in, Dan, and we'll see how it goes.
I know. Keep training and I'll be there.
Solid effort. Thanks, Dan, and thank you for listening. No Pro 14 or Welsh club action next week, but we have, of course, got internationals to preview, so make sure you don't miss that. We'll be back to chat rugby with you then. Thanks for listening. Podcast Network.